Hey friends, Katie here. I am so grateful that you make the time to listen to Proof to Product. To show my appreciation, we are releasing 4 new podcast episodes this week. I hope you enjoy them as you're relaxing, traveling, or maybe working. But to all of our friends in the United States, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday surrounded by loved ones. Thank you for the support you give to me and this podcast. I truly appreciate it. So enjoy these episodes. We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Adam Smith of Life is Funny Press, a letterpress greeting card company based in Los Angeles. Adam came to PaperCamp in 2014, and he currently sells his products through wholesale, retail, and custom channels. On today's episode, we're talking about leaving a full-time job to pursue entrepreneurship, a dad's perspective on juggling family and business, plus why it's important to not force yourself into creative work that doesn't feel right for you. Hey, Adam, thanks so much for joining me today. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So when did you first grow an interest in letterpress printing? Where did you learn to print?
I moved out to California from Massachusetts when I was 22. Uh-huh. And my only aspirations were to like write songs about anti-war and anti-Bush at the time. It was the month that we invaded Iraq. And my only job criteria was finding a place that was like air conditioned and close by my house.
Nice criteria.
So I ended up working at this commercial print shop in West Los Angeles, just cutting paper, answering phones, kind of customer service stuff.
Did they do letterpress there too?
They didn't. It was all just offset.
Okay.
You know, real run of the mill, like lawyer offices, stationery, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But these two women started coming in with letterpress jobs that they had printed to have me cut them down. And I got to know them a little bit. And this was Chelsea and Jamie, who had started Sugar Paper around the same time. So for like 2 years, I was like, these girls are cool. I want to work for them. And like, I knew letterpress, but I didn't, you know, I'd never really seen the machines run too much. I just recognized the printing as being really, really nice. And so, yeah, after 2 years of like incessantly asking them for a job, they were in the position to to invent a job for me. And so I just went over. I'd never printed before. They taught me on the old machines that they had, and we kind of just went from there.
That's awesome. That's really great. I know that a lot of people that are printers also, well, they call themselves printers before they call themselves artists sometimes. Yeah. Do you call yourself a printer more than an artist?
Most definitely.
And so you knew you had a love for letterpress printing. You learned it on the fly through the ladies at Sugar Paper. But when did you start Life is Funny Press?
So I'd been working there for a few years. And just, you know, I'd always like, when I worked at the old print shop, I would make dumb business cards that really had nothing to do with any kind of business. But just like, I'm like, oh, I have the ability to have stuff printed or print stuff myself. So I just started having fun with that at Sugar Paper, like after work. Mm-hmm. They were awesome and let me use the machines and didn't really care what I did as long as I showed up for work in the morning. So I did that in 2009. I started like coming up with ideas for cards, but I didn't really do anything too seriously until the beginning of 2011.
So it was more of a hobby in 2009. And like at some point you kind of flipped the switch and were like, no, this is something I want to do as a business.
Yeah.
Cool.
And, you know, registered a business, tried to come up with a little bit of a catalog and got my first wholesale account, which was Sugar Paper.
They're
my
nice.
My longest standing retailer.
It's good to know people in high places, right?
Indeed.
Cool. Well, I know, you know, as you just mentioned, you held down a day job for several years before branching out on your own. You know, having done that myself for several years, I know how hard that is to manage.
Yeah.
But did you feel that it provided you with benefits in growing your own business?
Well, just the way that I got into the printing and everything through ending up having this job. Mm-hmm. I think it's very unique in terms of like people's experiences with how they started a greeting card company. But because of that day job, I was able to see in like how customers would react to my cards, you know? Right. So like that was super valuable for me to see and kind of like just being around you know, a big successful wholesale line was definitely beneficial. But at the same time, I didn't have as much time as I wanted to devote
to work on the business. Yeah, that's where I struggled as well. I felt like, you know, I worked in the legal industry at the time, so it was a completely different type of work. And I was traveling a lot, and I just, on one hand, I felt like it benefited my business because I had the funding to put money back into my business. I wasn't reliant on my business to support our family. But at the same time, I really struggled with the time commitment of, you know, I'm spending all this time in a job that it has benefits, but I also feel like it's pulling me away from the thing that I really want to do most. But you were in a unique situation in that you were working with a company that was in the same industry that you were looking to grow into, which is cool. So you already talked a little bit about some of the things that influenced your type of work or when you were looking for a job when you came to LA. What types of things motivate you when you're creating new products?
I try to take like real life experiences. And I know that sounds kind of like, you know, cliche or whatever, but I'm like a super sappy person when it comes down to it. Like you see me on the street and if I'm not smiling, I look like this giant like bear of a man. But so like when I started off, I had all these love cards. And then, so my battle throughout the years in creating new stuff is like, well, you know, how do you create a sympathy card that is funny or, you know, just different categories of cards that maybe didn't come as natural to me as like a love card or a birthday card.
Right.
But just kind of sitting back and like looking at those situations and being like, well, what's funny about, you know, having a baby and not trying to force anything, because early on I was like making a baby card just to make a baby card, and it didn't really have much to do with my brand.
I love that. I feel like there's a lot of people that I talk to when they're just starting out, and you know, one of the frequently asked questions we hear is like, how many products do I need and what categories do I need to fill? Like what occasions do I need to hit and all this? And I think some people treat it like a checkbox, right? Like a situation where, nope, I need more birthday or nope, I need sympathy or whatever it is. And I like what you said, because we need to stay true to who we are. And I think that the best work we produce comes from just our natural interests and our love of what we do. You know, like if you have to force something, it's not going to be as good as something that just comes naturally to you.
And just being in that mindset, I think over the years has let my line like organically grow into those categories where I never thought it might have.
You know. Totally. How many, can I ask how many cards you have now?
It fluctuates. I'm kind of the worst at pulling old or unsuccessful cards out of my line. But I do.
You don't always have to pull them.
Yeah, but I do with every release. And so I've got about 145.
Nice. Right. That's good. That's a lot. It adds a lot of variety to things. You know, as somebody that prints your own work, I imagine that it gives you a lot of flexibility to try new things with your products. You know, I outsourced all my printing, and so I'd have to make some decisions, some hard decisions on the design side of what am I really going to run, because I was running larger quantities of things. Do you print in small batches to kind of test the waters before you print larger quantities?
Yeah, I definitely do. The biggest thing for me is like, I might love an idea and think that it's like the best thing that I've ever come up with.
Right.
But, you know, I don't want to print like 1,000 and then find out that it's only funny to me or, you know, it doesn't work. So
may I ask some of the specifics around this? Like how many will you print in a first run of something?
It depends a lot on like most of my cards are 2-color, which obviously with letterpress, you're printing 1 color at a time.
Yep.
Some are 3-color. I don't know why I do that to myself, but the more complex ones I'll print at least a few hundred of generally. Uh-huh. But like, you know, a lot of my newer cards in the last like year and a half have been just like 1 color black, and I have black on like all the time. So
every day.
Yeah. So I'll even just shoot like, you know, 25 or whatever, like just to, I mean, some I know people will like, or like I post them on Instagram and they get good feedback or whatever. So.
Well, and I know, too, you've done some things that are very, like, special circumstances, whether it's, like, political stuff or, you know, very, like, niche for a certain amount of time. So, obviously, for that, you want to be more conservative in your numbers. Can I ask you a question about letterpress 1, 2, and 3 color? Are you able to price those differently in the market? Or are you selling them for the same?
Yeah, everything costs the same.
Even though you're spending more time on the back end making.
Yeah, because I feel like the time that you don't spend on a 1 color, you're spending somewhere else.
It's a wash.
Yeah. And like, I don't feel like a retailer thinks any less of a one color card versus a three color card because they just see the niceness of the printing. And
right.
The genius behind the words.
And right. The genius behind the intent of the card. No, I didn't mean any disrespect to one
color cards.
I was just thinking out loud of like, I know that's a time consuming and
yeah. No, it's something that I've thought about for sure, but I just feel like.
I know you're a guy that likes to keep things simple too, yeah. Like on the business side. And I mean that respectfully, you know, yeah. Like you, whereas some people might overcomplicate with multiple pricing tiers and things like that. Yeah. It sounds like you've kind of evened it out across the board. So that
well, and for the first like, yeah, 4 or 5 years, every card was two color, like before I even like ever did any little silly images and stuff, it was just like a sentence in black with maybe a word or two that was like in a different color to like accentuate that.
Yeah.
So that was really easy to get my pricing down to like a science.
Okay.
Using the same, you know, formula every time. And then, yeah, once I added a color, took one away, it was really like, yeah, it's a little bit more time or less time, but I feel like
it's all the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about paper stuff? Like, have you changed your paper over the years in terms of what you're using? Gone either thicker or thinner on that?
I changed brands because the one that I was using previously, when it's scored to make the fold, it sometimes cracks. So I'm using a different one now, and I love it.
Okay. How thick are you using? Can I ask that?
It's 118 pounds.
Oh, nice. Yeah, there's been some discussion in our online forum for the alumni of, like, how thick of paper should you use, and is it okay to, like, you know, go thinner to reduce costs and things like that. I think watching your production costs are always important, and so I just find it curious to hear what other people are using and how it's going. So you have two small children, and I would love to get a dad's perspective on how you manage work, balancing work and family life. Do you have, like, I know your wife works as well, so how do you guys manage the kids and your work schedules?
So I should say that we do manage it. Is that where this is going?
Well, yeah, I guess like you don't, well, you do manage it because you run a business and you keep your family alive. but in terms, like, I don't know, I've talked to a lot of different moms that are feeling the push pull. And I know you and I have talked off of the podcast separately about how you guys juggle the primary caregiver position, but you also have your full time job. So
yeah. How do you make that work? That was my joke is like, are we actually managing it? But yeah, everyone still has their everything intact, so we're doing okay. So my faux wife works as a nurse, and her schedule always changes, so that's kind of a wrench, but like it also gives us flexibility because she can set her own schedule in terms of what days she works, and then you know, sometimes a deadline will come up for me, but I'll just have to print at night, which if I couldn't do that, I don't think that I could keep the business going. And now I have my shop is actually like a little bit of retail too. So it's like balancing, trying to get in there during the day because no one's going to come buy cards if I'm there at 1 in the morning.
Right.
But.
So it's more of a nighttime, nap time type of hustle. You're not able to like.
Well, she works 12-hour shifts, but only a couple of weeks. So those 2 days, obviously I'm 100% with the kids, but I can also, you know, we deliver jobs and we kind of do errands that.
I've enjoyed looking at your Instagram where you have the kids handing off the cards. It's super cute. And it's just a good example of you roll with what the circumstances are, right? Like,
yeah.
The kids are little right now, so you do what you can to make it work. And
yep.
I found for myself that I really need blocks of time, like a good chunk of time to do work and then a good chunk of time for family, because I feel like if it overlaps too much, I just can't focus on anything. And then I feel like I'm doing everyone a disservice. Do you feel that way at all?
I do. I try to keep like a master list of all the things that I need to get done, but also I'm aware that the trying to set specific goals in terms of like, this one's going to be done on Tuesday. Like I kind of am more broad about it and just like, you know, obviously there's certain like hard deadlines, but I just try to get things done when the time.
But being self-employed too, we're able to, you know, really, we are able to make our own schedule to some extent. I mean, it depends on our clients too, but I imagine, I know you do custom work as well as your wholesale line and now your retail shop as well. So, you know, I assume that you can pick and choose which projects you want to take on and kind of manage that inflow of work to some extent.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and then there's certain times when I'm just like, taking every job that I can, and
right,
because living and paying rent on a shop in Los Angeles is ridiculous sometimes. But
So I was going to ask you about set work hours and hours for family time, but we kind of covered that already. Yeah. So tell me about how you define success for your business. And has that changed from when you first got started to now?
Yeah, I think so. Like when I started out and went out on my own, well, even before I went out on my own, when I was like reaching out to retailers in my spare time and just trying to like build up a little bit, like a base of stores that have my cards. My dream was, you know, like I want to be in like 6 trillion stores and like have a bunch of presses running. And I've dialed that back quite a bit in my older age. Like I love, I absolutely love being on the press and wouldn't ever, I don't think, want to like take myself away from that.
Mm-hmm. What part of your business would you want to take yourself away from? If cost and time were no issue.
I mean, I've been having help with like production, like assembling, sleeving cards, which I remember listening to Sam from Modern Disaster, Near Modern Disaster on the podcast about that being the bane of our existence. But, you know, I'm hoping this summer maybe I can get someone to help out at the shop so that, because right now I don't really have set hours. Mm-hmm. It's a weird situation, weird neighborhood of shops, but
So talk about that. It's like it's a shipping explain this retail shop. It's like
it's in the neighborhood of West Adams, which is kind of like just east of West Los Angeles, Culver City area. Mm-hmm. And the people that bought the property, it's this old dirt lot that was like a firewood lot for like years and years and years and years, and then this partnership got 12 shipping containers and like converted them into little retail shops and dropped them on this lot of land in the middle of this residential neighborhood.
So you have a converted shipping container that has your press in it and you have a little retail storefront, and it's essentially your office and print shop and studio.
No, it's because it's so small. Very little makes it sound huge. I have my press in there. Uh-huh. And my inventory, and then like a tiny bit of retail space, just of my cards.
Yeah.
And so now I'm splitting office time, and some of my equipment is in my garage. So I do all my printing there. I don't do any cutting or any finishing work like that there.
Okay. I think it's a cool use of space. And, you know, we've had a lot of alums that are looking for retail spaces that they can also, you know, have maybe in the back is their, you know, studio design print, like print section, and then the front's retail. And I don't know, I think this is pretty cool and fun how you found this unique spot to serve your needs.
And no one really knows where it's going. It could be developed, I think, sooner than later, the property. But, you know, there's most of the shipping containers are full in terms of like people having spaces there. So it's just like a really cool community to be part of.
Awesome. Is it a bunch of other makers and like creative people?
No. So they're all creative, but I'm the only one making something on the spot. There's a tattoo artist actually.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, most of them are just like small boutiques, like vintage clothes.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And there's a barber there now too, which is
convenient for you.
Yeah.
So tell me about a transitional time in your business where you had to make some tough decisions and kind of how you got through it.
I mean, I would say the biggest was just us deciding if we could manage to have kids with both of our work goals.
Yeah.
Just like with anything, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, when was the right time to go to quit my job and take this full time, it was kind of just like, you know, F it. When's going to be a good time for anything? Let's just do it. And then, you know, adjust on the back end. So
I love that. I think that's a real true fear that many, many people, well, both of those things are true fears that many people have of, you know, when's the best time to start a family if that's something they want to do. And then also when's the best time to leave a day job. And did you prepare at all to leave your day job? Like, did you try to save a certain amount of money, or did you set like a time that you knew you wanted to leave by, or was it just kind of flying by the seat of your pants?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately and unfortunately, I kind of do everything just flying by the seat of my pants, much to the chagrin of my lady friend here. We're getting married officially next year, so I keep calling her things like faux wife.
I know, I caught that, and I was like, we should probably explain that.
But we've known each other for 25 years. We have two beautiful kids, so.
Yes, you do. You know.
So yeah, I think the biggest transition was just figuring out when to have kids, what to do, and go from there.
They're big life decisions, you know, and it does affect your work because you have less time and your money is going to other things. It's tough, but.
And not to equate, you know, a business. I mean, we all equate our businesses with, you know, being our first child or being another child. And obviously I love my kids a little bit more than I love my business, but just a little bit. But just being able to like jump out on my full-time job, I think, and go full-time with my card line kind of gave me the confidence like, hey, what's a kid? You know, we can do that too.
Right. So, we made this other work. Now we can do this too. Cool. What advice would you give someone that's just kind of starting out in a product-based business?
Choose what you want to be and who you want your brand to represent, I think is the biggest thing. Which, you know, like I said before, I struggled with how do I make a sympathy card or how do I make, like, if it doesn't work, don't try to force it and just make sure that what you're making or what you're designing or what you're creating is you and not, you know, you're not trying to like follow the next guy or the next girl to see what is going to work in the marketplace. Like there's a market for everything, I think. And you just need to be true to what you really want to do.
Absolutely.
And when you want to jump out on your full-time job, just do it.
Never been truer advice. Awesome. So what is next for Life is Funny Press? What do you have going on the rest of the year or, you know, coming up for you?
So for about 2 years, I've been like toying around with like, what other products can I introduce to my line?
Love it.
Yeah. And I go back and forth with like, you know, should I do this, which I can't make in-house, or should I try to only do things that I can make in-house. Realistically, I like making all this stuff. And, you know, I like the work that goes into it and being able to say that my hands are on everything. So I think by the end of the summer or so with my next release, I'm going to have a few more paper-based products. And
things that you can still continue to make?
Or Okay. Yeah. But also I think I might branch out into some other cool stuff that I'm excited to make that I'm not, maybe not printing on paper, but I'll still have my hands on. So
how does that feel? Like, I know you've done everything on your, you know, you've done the production of everything up until now. Like, is that scary? Is it, it's a different process to lead up to it. Cause if you're making it, like we talked about earlier, you can just kind of try stuff,
but
it's a bigger investment and you have to think things through and really crunch your numbers a lot harder for new products, especially. Well,
it'll still be stuff that I have my hands on enough that I can kind of test the waters. And I think, having the tiny storefront that I have is going to work great for this kind of stuff because I can kind of feel out how people are going to feel about it. And
has the retail storefront given you a good market research tool to get feedback from people?
Not for the most part. It's true. Yeah, it's such a strange, there's not a lot of foot traffic. So, I mean,
it's not a traditional retail.
Yeah. Okay. And it's still pretty new. It's only about a year and a half. And there's been a lot of turnover for the tenants there. So, collectively, we're trying to like build up throwing events and stuff. Like, I'm going to start doing an open mic there a couple of weeks just to kind of get a different look in there and give people in the neighborhood something to do. Maybe
that's awesome. I know you're a musician too. Like, how does your music play into what you're developing on the product side? Does it?
Not really. I mean, it gives me a chance to go against everybody's professional social media advice and like record me writing stupid songs on Instagram. But no, for the most part, except for like the, like I was saying before, how I started off, I had way too many love cards because I'm just like a sappy guy. Mm-hmm. Same thing with music. I have way too many sappy love songs about my faux wife.
I would think there would be overlap though, because both are very creative outlets. You know, it's you creating and you imagining and I don't know. But
I feel like with cards, you know, especially like just printed on the front cards that we all do these days. You really have to concentrate a feeling or an emotion into like very few words or very small space. I think it's definitely a creative outlet, but it's trickier than, you know, saying like writing a story or writing a song or a poem or something, because
right.
you have a lot more wiggle room with something like that.
I was going to say, it requires, especially with your type of cards that are humorous and they're smart, though, too. It's like smart humor, too. Like, you have to be concise, like you're talking about. So how do you brainstorm this stuff? Do you have, like, a notebook that you keep ideas in and jot things down as you go, or?
Yeah, the Notes app in the iPhone is super helpful for that. I also am super timeline driven. So, you know, if I know that I should be releasing cards, I kind of use that as a conduit to get my butt writing and all that kind of stuff. But
are you releasing 3 to 4 times a year? Or how often are you releasing?
Yeah, 3 to 4 times a year.
Nice.
And like, I didn't do the show this year, the stationary show in May, but you know, I still planned and did release a bunch of new stuff around the same time, just to try to reach out to all my existing retailers and new ones to let them know that.
Well, it makes sense. They're still buying, you know, you want to get your stuff in front of them to buy.
Brainstorming wise, like a lot of times the cards will come out of nowhere, and like kind of a gross story, but recently walked into the bathroom and the toilet paper roll was empty. And so I just like took a picture of the toilet paper roll, walked out, because I think one of the kids is asleep and the other one was out with my wife, and just sat down and drew the empty toilet paper roll, wrote bummer underneath it, and it became a sympathy card, which I really love.
So I like that one too. That's good. That's life imitating work, work imitating life, whatever it is. That's awesome. Well, it was really fun to chat with you today. Where can people find you online?
I am at Life is Funny LA on Instagram and Twitter, and then Life is Funny Press on Facebook.
Excellent. And lifeisfunnypress.com too.
Oh, right. I have a website. lifeisfunnypress.com. Yep. And I'm on Etsy Wholesale and Etsy. And Etsy was my first website a long time ago, of course.
Mine too.
Yep.
Mine too. Yeah, we all got to start somewhere, right? And indeed. Somehow a lot of roads lead back to Etsy, but awesome. Well, Adam, thank you again for your time today. This was really fun to hear, you know, how you're juggling things and how you got into this business. I think it's a fun story to hear that you started with another brand and branched out on your own, and just how you're motivated and inspired when you're developing your products. So thank you so much for your time.
Right on. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Hey friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our Paper Camp conference or our Paper Camp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale, to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is Paper Camp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. Paper Camp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd, and will be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer Paper Camp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our e-course program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp, and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our Paper Camp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at proof2product.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.